roar heard as far away as 6 kilometers, and which caused the eyes of the hundreds of species within hearing to pop open in panic. Males from distant prides answered. The nomad padded away into the bush. It would be only a temporary retreat. In the morning, at daybreak, he would shuffle back, head lowered, shoulders hunched, and determined. The females had no success hunting that night, but would try again at daybreak. Desperate times call for desperate measures. They lay with their cubs and 2 older adolescent males within a few meters of Sekoa. Normally they would be separated by several meters, perhaps more, but not this night. Perhaps they sensed his failing health, perhaps not. He ruled an unlucky pride. Disease and inbreeding had reduced its numbers, probably the reason he'd managed it so long. The old male had no way of knowing that his body was slowly and inexorably being destroyed by bovine tuberculosis exacerbated by HIV/AIDS, the leonine variant of human immunodeficiency virus, HIV/AIDS, that he shared with those bipedal creatures that alternately feared and admired him. Normally it would be a benign presence, but his reduced immune system had left him vulnerable to the tuberculosis that daily ravaged his lungs. It was a disease he might otherwise have been able to resist, or at least endure. The combination meant that his remaining time as the alpha male of his pride might be numbered in hours, his life in days, perhaps, if he were lucky, weeks. The only certainty in his existence was that on the morrow, soon or late, he would have to face this young pretender. If, by some chance, he succeeded in driving him off, there would be another after him, and then another. Holding his territory in place had defined his existence since he'd taken the pride from an older lion 4 years previously. The image of those lurking, waiting males caused him to growl, a low rumble. If he failed, if he lost the pride, his cubs would be killed to bring the adult females back into estrus. He knew that. He'd done the same when he took over this pride. One of the females, as if her thoughts resonated with his, gathered her cubs closer to her and licked them with her tongue, an organ rough enough on its surface to scrape raw meat from a bone, but soft enough to smooth her cub's fur. The cub batted at her and tried to attack her massive paw. The female swatted it, an act of love. In the moonlight, Sekoa, the 4 females, the cubs, and the adolescent males appeared a uniform gray. At daybreak, they would become tawny brown, and on parts of Sekoa's otherwise darker mane, almost orange. But these colors would not register on their functionally colorblind eyes. Day or night, their world was uniform in coloration, bright or dim, but predominantly gray. His night vision, on the other hand, was near perfect. He swiveled his massive head right and then left. That fact and the moonlight allowed him to assess his surroundings. He could make out a slight rise at his front, leading toward the heaviest growth in the bush. His rival would charge from that direction, using the grade to propel him down and into the grassy patch in front of the sleeping pride. If Sekoa were to stand there, the attacker's momentum would surely knock him off his feet and leave him open to teeth and claws. He would have to find a better place to engage this usurper. Another sharp stab of pain blocked this intuitive rumination. If he didn't sleep, he'd never have the strength to fight. If he did drift off, he might not wake. He shifted once more and growled in pain and frustration. 15 kilometers to the east, in a small cluster of rondavels outside Kazungula, the village elders pondered the fate of Lovermore Endlovu. He had crossed the line. He had acquired a bad reputation. The other young men from the village